You're listening to the ISACA podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with ISACA security experts Dustin Brewer and Frank Downs. In this episode, we're going to discuss microcomputing and its many uses, from revolutionizing wireless communication for the open source community to helping create cool gadgets such as home security cameras or even beer brewing systems. To get us started, can you talk a bit about your own experiences with microcomputing?
So we were talking about microcomputing, and it reminded me of how Dustin and I first met. So we first met back in 2012 when we were doing a joint operation and training event for the Department of Defense out in Hawaii. A real pain ship tour there, right? And we were out there for about a month and a half. And one of the things we had to work with was help people understand different elements of computing. And we were in a really fun part of our career where we got to experiment a lot with some weird stuff. And one of the things we really always tried to figure out was, and we both love wireless, right? We love wireless. I mean, I think we even have a whole episode on Wi-Fi. So we're always looking at different ways to do fun things with gadgets and enable, you know, wireless communications and so forth. And we realized this kind of like shared love of computing and wireless when we were doing this first outing together and training and operational event. And around the same time, actually a little bit before this, Raspberry Pi had announced that their first computer was coming out, their first ARM computer. And for those of you that don't know what it is a small ARM system. And the whole goal was to have a small ARM system, basically a computer on one board that people could buy and use for a bunch of different things. And it's literally the size of maybe a playing card deck, and with at its thickest point, probably the same thickness, right? Because and that's probably the Ethernet jack, if I remember correctly. But so they were doing a giveaway, and it was for a specific magazine where they're like, you know, every issue of this magazine is going to have a promotional Raspberry Pi in it. And at the time, we didn't have a car, and I was like, Dustin, we got to go find this computer. And I, to this day, still feel bad because I took Dustin and we walked like 4 miles throughout all of downtown Honolulu, going to all these different magazine stores and Barnes and Nobles and stuff, trying to find this one magazine. Never got it. It's completely sold out, all to find this one microcomputer. But then if you actually got one and you knew what you could do with this thing, you would have realized it's completely worth it. Because when we talk about Raspberry Pis, what it really is kind of like, I'm going to be hyperbolic here, I'm sure, a revolution in making, you know, microcomputing accessible to everybody. If you want to play around with cyber, if you want to play around with IT, if you have a cool gadget idea, a lot of what you want to do can start like with Raspberry Pi devices. And I feel like I'm talking too much on this topic. But what do you think, Dustin? How would you describe them as yourself?
I remember we had some projects that we were working on before the Raspberry Pi came out. And we were using, at the time, what were called GumSticks computers.
Yeah, the GumSticks.
And they were great. They had an ARM processor. Their only real downfall is they weren't really open source. So there was very little, like, you had to build your own Linux kernel for it. You had to build all the modules for anything that you would need, and it was kind of pain in the neck. The other thing was that they were really expensive. I think they were like around $300 to $400 a piece, and that was just for the main module. Like if you wanted to add Ethernet or any kind of connectivity, you had to buy like a what we now refer to today in this industry as shields, but back then it was just a little secondary circuit board that went on top and kind of connected to the GumSticks. So like Frank was saying, like this kind of brought everything into a more affordable, easy to use form factor. I think the first Raspberry Pi was somewhere around $30. It had an ARM processor. It was a 32-bit ARM processor. You know, now we're up to Raspberry Pi 4, and it's a 64-bit processor. It's got 4 gigs of RAM. I mean, it's basically a mini laptop computer that you can have. The other thing that kind of made this the Raspberry Pi somewhat revolutionary is that it had USB built into it. It had Ethernet built into it, as Frank mentioned. But also, the way it was powered was via USB. So in other words, it used 5 volts. Depending on what you need to do with it, you know, that's how many amps you needed, or, you know, how big of a power supply you needed to supply it with. But you could plug it in. You could use, you know, the batteries that we use, the external batteries that we use to charge our cell phones to power it. You could use a wall plug to power it. It just made everything a lot easier to use. Now, along with that came this kind of open source interest in the Raspberry Pi as well, where I mentioned the gum sticks before, and you could build your own flavor of Linux. I think the manufacturer might have provided you a flavor of Linux that was theirs, but there was very little community support. And again, it wasn't open source. Raspberry Pi was embraced by the open source community, and you can install Kali Linux on it. You can install Windows 10 has a version of Windows 10 IoT for it. You can install Debian. I mean, any kind of Linux or again, even Windows, you can install, an underlying operating system. And that may, you have a computer that you can install an operating system on. Great. This thing is tiny. It uses really low power. It's got USB. It's got Ethernet. And it's got great community support behind it. And I think that's kind of what really started to set it aside from any kind of competition that had come before or after. Now, of course, in this podcast, we're not just talking about the Raspberry Pi. Well, we are, because we love it. But we're not just going to talk about the Raspberry Pi, but also other microcomputers. So, of course, you've heard of Arduino before. But these are all these, the Arduino, the Raspberry Pi, these are kind of like these prototyping capable computers that you can use to create IoT devices, and you can use to test out different penetration testing tactics. I have definitely used Raspberry Pis and Arduinos in penetration tests that I've performed on companies before. They're throwaway technology, basically, right? So if, you leave a Raspberry Pi leave behind device somewhere on a network or somewhere external on a perimeter that's monitoring Wi-Fi for a penetration test, and somebody finds it and takes it, you're out $40, right? It's not really that big of a deal. Plus, whatever other hardware that you might have on it. But with the cost being lowered on ARM processors, on the components that go with a Raspberry Pi or a ATmega, such as the Arduino, or just the chips themselves, it's gotten a lot easier to make and distribute these things. And again, I hate using the term throwaway technology because it sounds wasteful, but that's kind of the term that we use, right? Like, printers are throwaway technology because we don't want to spend $100 buying new toner for it when you can just buy the brand new printer for $100. But I'm not by any means saying that anybody should go out there and throw away their printer. Frank, what do you think about what I just said? How do you think that the Raspberry Pi has kind of helped with not just security?
I think that Raspberry Pis are great as a security device because it gives you a lot of different capabilities that you wouldn't necessarily think are traditional. One, you can put firewalls on them, so that's cool. And they are assignable with an IP, so you can do a lot of filtering with it. There's a lot of different builds of Raspbian out there, which is the Linux build that goes on these Raspberry Pis. Mm-hmm. And you can use them to kind of make your own defense in depth kind of experience, right? So in more ways than one, not just logically, but also physically. You can put filters on both ends. You can use them for, I'll give you a great example of security, right? Right now, I am using a Raspberry Pi with, it's called Pi Hole for a configuration there. And what Pi Hole does is it filters all of my DNS. And it makes sure that it basically cuts down on ads and trackers on my getting through to any of my endpoints inside of my house. And it really does a great job. It's one of the, I would say, there's a lot of different projects out there that can enhance like your online regular computing experience with Raspberry Pis. But the one that I recommend the most is Pi Hole. And so life without ads and blocking, it is literally part of my defense in depth as we're talking about it setup, because I use Brave Browser, right, for all of my browsing, and that blocks scripts and so forth. But then anything else that might get through, then I've got another layer of protection with this Pi Hole right here. Additionally, it allows you to, you can do so many different things. You can then turn it into a honeypot if you want to, right? Now you've got a honeypot that's on your network that can then kind of lure attackers in and then, kind of catch them as they're coming at you. I know Dustin talked about how you can like power them off of removable batteries and remote batteries. I really enjoy that because then if you wanted to make like rogue AP kind of distraction capabilities, you're not limited to just where there might be power. One of the things for physical security, which I've done with this, was, and Dustin, I think you remember this, it was either 2013 or 2014, when it was before home security cameras, wireless security cameras became big, right? And they were big, but not accessible, right? Accessible to everyone. So it was before Nest and Ring and Blink really took off. And I wanted that, but I didn't want to pay the crazy prices. So I was able, and I think the distro is still out there, it's called Owl Cam. I was able to buy a Raspberry Pi with a plug-in, a module for a camera and a motion sensor. And then that was actually at my front door for several years. And it was just whenever someone had sensed motion, it would take a picture or a video or things like that, and it would store it locally. So I wouldn't have to invest too much into cloud infrastructure. So I really enjoy it from all those different angles. It really can become a security device. But then, like, when you're talking about IoT, it also has so many different applications as well. Did you tell them about your beer setup?
No.
Tell them that. Nope. One.
So yeah, again, this is very big in the DIY community as well. So Raspberry Pi actually has a thing called BrewPi. This basically a Linux installation with some nice web UI front ends and some other things that kind of control the GPIO ports and everything. What it'll do is it'll actually monitor your beer as it ferments. So if you're a home brewer, you can actually monitor the temperature. You can actually have the Raspberry Pi so that it can turn on like an air compressor or something to make it cooler, or turn on a fan or something to make it cooler in that fermentation chamber. So there's a lot of really cool side applications you can use for this. Like, and like Frank was mentioning with IoT, like, what really sets this device apart from other IoT devices? Not much. As a matter of fact, it's more like IoT devices than it is like anything else, right? And of course, IoT is so loosely defined nowadays that it's, you know, our phones are IoT, right? But they're really mini computers, but they're actually now just kind of big computers. Like, we have all these processing powers in our pockets now, and it's amazing. But, you know, Raspberry Pis, I think one of the big things about them is they're just so configurable. You know, if you buy an IoT device from a manufacturer.
Cyber Play-Doh.
Cyber Play-Doh. I like that. Raspberry Pi, Cyber Play-Doh. So it's configurable. And again, if you buy an IoT device from a manufacturer, you're locked into what they provided. And that doesn't always include access to the actual device or the operating system itself, right? You can buy an IoT device and you have no idea, you know, what the underlying system software is. You don't know if it's updated. You don't know if it's an old Linux kernel that's vulnerable to other kinds of attacks. You don't know if there's a backdoor in it. Raspberry Pis kind of help solve that. But again, you have to do a lot more work to get them to do what an IoT device would do. And they do use up a little bit more energy as well, depending on the IoT device, the IoT type device that you're using.
And can I interrupt you real quick?
Because
I really like that point you made. And I hit that point myself with two instances with my Raspberry Pi. The first one was the camera. I don't use it as my camera anymore, right? I have a Ring doorbell, right? And in order for Ring doorbell to get the full function of it, you have to pay a subscription, right? So I'm stuck in the, I pay the yearly plan, I think it's like $50, right? $50 a year to have this Ring doorbell service compared to what I had with my camera that was at the door that was with Raspberry Pi. But for me, not having to deal with the configuration, not having to always update it and fix it and all that stuff, for me, the trade-off was worth it in that instance. Because as cool as it was for that setup, it was a lot of work and things would go on the fritz. And I'd be like, oh, the light is off. That means the camera's not working. What do I do now? And so forth. And we're talking sometimes it'd be days of troubleshooting where I could find the hours here and there. Whereas with the Ring doorbell, it's in, it's on, it's not my problem, right?
And you also had your Raspberry Pi at one point where you could actually talk to Siri, and through your phone,
you were able
to open up your garage door.
Yeah.
Again, doesn't sound like much nowadays, but this is before we had those kinds of devices.
Yeah, we did it before it was cool.
Yeah, before it was widely available, right? Frank kind of had that set up going on.
But then
on.
I almost started a fire in my garage because I wasn't great at electrical wiring. So you can really see, actually, that's what happened, bud. Remember, that's why I had to get the new garage door opener. Because I fried it in trying to rewire it, and I fried out the whole motor. And that's how I ended up with that Chamberlain that now it does it without me having to have the Pi hooked up.
But this brings us to a really good point. Like with Raspberry Pis, you know, I mentioned the GPIO ports earlier, and it does have these like little pin ports that you can use to send signals to other digital equipment or whatever else. And that brings us into, you know, somewhat of industrial IoT or even ICS at this point, where you know, even with the brewery, the home brewery example, where it can control like a compressor on a refrigeration equipment or something like that. People make Raspberry Pi things that control pumps for liquids. People make them so that they, it really is kind of like building your own little industrial control system within your own within your house or within your whatever project you're working on. Now, again, the problem with that is that, you know, whereas you go to Siemens and you ask, you know, you you want their ICS control device. Yeah, it's going to cost you a lot of money, but you're going to have all that software and hardware there. It's going to be ready to go. It's going to be off the shelf. You're going to be able to plug it into whatever you need. Whereas with a Raspberry Pi, you're going to have to do everything, all the wiring. Hopefully you won't catch your garage on fire like Frank did.
I almost said almost.
Okay, sorry. Hopefully you almost won't catch anything on fire ever, but with a Raspberry Pi specifically. You'll have to do all the setup with the hardware and software. I mean, it's definitely a true DIY thing. Now, again, most of the people out there, it's a very well supported by the open source community. And if it's already been done before, they're, you know, usually these people are very good at sharing their source code and also opening it up to suggestion, you know, with a true open source community. So a lot of really cool things you can do with it. As far as security goes, like Frank mentioned, it's kind of endless possibilities. You basically have a mini computer on your network that you can do whatever you want with, from, you know, DNS monitoring to, you know, you can also install a Snort on it or some kind of IDS sensor software on there as well, and actually have that, so you don't have to waste a laptop or another computer on that on your home network. So lots of really, really cool things you can do with this thing.
Thanks, Dustin, and thank you, Frank. That's all the time we have for this episode of the podcast, but to keep listening, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.